Good morning. We're here on case 10-297, Loudon versus Radiology and Imaging Services, Incorporated. Mr. Leek.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, I am Doug Leek, and I'm here on behalf of the defendants, appellants, Dr. Patterson and his medical group, and I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for a rebuttal. In this case, we are asking this court to reverse the Ninth District decision in which it erroneously created a new and independent cause of action for negligent infliction of emotional distress in medical malpractice cases. In Ohio, there is no fallback, standalone cause of action for negligent infliction of emotional distress when a plaintiff's allegations are limited to medical negligence. In 1995, in Heiner versus Mortuzzo, this court stated at page 87 to 88 that it refused to create a subspecies tort for negligent infliction of emotional distress that arises in the physician-patient relationship. Relief for emotional distress and mental anguish is already available to plaintiffs pursuant to revised code 2305.113 for medical claims. In medical claims, they can allege that they suffered emotional distress. There simply exists no authority to create a new and separate cause of action for negligent infliction of emotional distress from medical negligence. And under the erroneous decision by the Ninth District, by creating this new negligent infliction of emotional distress, plaintiffs who allege medical negligence can now circumvent the substantive and procedural requirements for medical negligence cases. For example, statutes of limitations for medical negligence cases is 1 year under revised code 2305.113A. They must bring a medical negligence case within 1 year. However, under the erroneous reasoning of the Ninth District, a separate negligent infliction of emotional distress case premised on medical negligence can now be brought under the 2 year statute of limitations for negligent infliction of emotional distress under revised code 2305.10. So now, under this decision, if a plaintiff is alleging medical negligence but misses the 1 year statute of limitations, they can then pursue a negligent infliction of emotional distress under the 2 year statute of limitations, thus avoiding the statute of limitations for the medical negligence case.
Counsel, I'm having trouble finding, in it's a long opinion, but where exactly is this radical departure in the opinion?
What happened was we argued below that we believed that they failed to prove their underlying medical negligence case.
Okay, well, where can I look in the opinion to find this radical departure?
Well, I think that this decision in and of itself speaks for itself, that it recognized that in addition to the medical negligence actions, they had a separate medical or negligent infliction.
Well, let me read you a paragraph of, at page 21, paragraph 42. Viewing the evidence in light most favorable to Mrs. Loudon, a jury could reasonably find, but for Dr. Patterson's negligent reading of the 2003 mammogram, Mrs. Loudon would not have had such a large tumor. The cancer would not have spread to her lymph nodes, and therefore she would not suffer from the emotional distress caused by her fear that she may be a victim of that increased risk of recurrence. Mrs. Loudon has presented evidence creating a genuine issue of material fact regarding whether Dr. Patterson breached his duty to her and whether his breach caused her any harm. It is for a jury to determine the credibility of the testimony if it finds it credible and assigned a dollar amount to the injury. That seems like black letter law to me.
I think that what that court was saying was that for their medical negligence action, that they had proved a genuine issue of material fact, but they went further to say, separate and apart from the medical negligence action, she also can maintain a negligent infliction of emotional distress. We moved for summary judgment both on the medical negligence case and on the negligent infliction of emotional distress. Within that finding of the genuine issue of material fact on the medical negligence, What's subsumed within that is the emotional distress claim and mental anguish that they can pursue under the tort of medical negligence. It is our position, by finding a genuine issue of material fact on the negligent infliction of emotional distress claim, we find that error because we believe that claim in and of itself does not exist within the context of a medical negligence action. And I think it is a decision and the effect of the decision that we are here challenging.
Well, counsel, both issues were sent back to the trial court. The issue of the medical malpractice as well as the negligent infliction of emotional distress, correct?
Exactly.
If you prevail in the trial court on the issue of medical malpractice, that there is no breach, et cetera, where is the appellee in that matter then?
We believe the case is then over because then
you have to have the underlying finding of medical negligence, correct?
Correct. And that is our position here.
So what you're really worried about, what I hear you saying, is that the extension of a presumed extension of the statute of limitations, so that if the 1 year is missed, you would then, or if your interpretation of the Ninth District is correct, they would still have then the ability to pursue a negligent infliction of or intentional infliction of emotional distress and prove a case within a case. In other words,
exactly.
If they've missed the malpractice, they get to prove a malpractice underlying case, and although there's no damages found for that, the next step is the negligent infliction of emotional distress.
That's exactly our position. It is our position that plaintiffs are not, we're not saying they're precluded from pursuing claims for emotional distress or mental anguish here. We are saying that is subsumed within the underlying medical malpractice action, which the Ninth District found there existed a genuine issue of material fact. We take issue with the fact that they also separately recognized a negligent infliction of emotional distress in this medical negligence actions. And because, as you just stated, Justice O'Connor, is that they have two statutes of limitations, one for the medical malpractice, and then now an extended one for negligent infliction of emotional distress for the same allegations of medical negligence. And it goes further. Medical malpractice cases are governed by Civil Rule 10D2, the Affidavit of Merit requirement. If they bring a negligent infliction of emotional distress case for medical negligence, they are not then bound by that because it's not under the medical malpractice requirement. Same thing goes for the longstanding law on expert testimony. Under Bruni versus Tatsumi, the medical malpractice case requires expert testimony. Whereas a negligent infliction of emotional distress case does not necessarily require expert testimony.
All right, so this is basically, if they were allowed to pursue both, you have a measure of non-economic damages here, correct?
Correct. Then you have the different statute, the statutory caps, one for medical negligence and one for non-medical negligence. And then they would get a different cap for a negligent infliction of emotional distress because they have that separate action that the Ninth District says they're allowed to pursue. And it is our position that the same relief is recoverable within the medical malpractice case, emotional distress, mental anguish. They would still have to prove breach of a standard of care, proximate cause, and damages. And within that would be proof of emotional distress. We just take issue that there exists under this decision a separate negligent infliction of emotional distress that then allows them to circumvent all the requirements of a medical negligence action. So we believe that this decision should be reversed just on that basis. But I would also like to address two other issues briefly that we find that the Ninth District decision is erroneous.
Mr. Leek, if I could ask you, the Second District in McGarry had talked about negligent infliction of emotional distress in and of itself, saying that it wasn't the case where you had an external force causing the putting someone in peril, or wasn't a witness of somebody else being put in peril. So it almost seemed like the definition didn't apply in that case. Would you go that far and accept the McGarry argument?
We relied heavily upon the McGarry case, and as a matter of fact, we asked the Ninth District to certify a conflict, which it refused. And we found the reasoning in McGarry applicable here. That was a delay in diagnosis where the patient was being treated for something else, and then was delay in diagnosis diagnosed with cancer. So we go with the same reasoning in McGarry that if they can prove their underlying medical malpractice case and establish emotional stress, that's fine, but you can't take the next step and create a new cause of action for negligent infliction of emotional distress. So we relied heavily upon McGarry, and while we're on that point, we believe that the decision is erroneous and it's amplified by the denial of the conflict. And when the Ninth District found that the plaintiff had proven a quantifiable physical effect on prognosis. And that touches on Ohio's longstanding law as set forth in Roberts versus Ohio Permanente on the loss of chance. And in that decision denying a conflict, the court looked at the fact that they have an expert that said she had an 85% chance of survivability, reduced to 82% chance of survivability because of the alleged negligence. And it was our position that that is not a compensable injury under the loss of chance because you have to prove less than probability of survivability or recovery under Roberts. So we found that that part of the decision is also erroneous. And then the analysis of a contemporaneous physical injury. It is our position that in order to prove emotional distress that under this court's case in Burris versus Grain Mutual Insurance, the plaintiff must sensorily perceive pain, discomfort, something to be able to connect it to the alleged emotional distress. And in this case, it's our position that the plaintiff, although there was allegedly growth of the tumor, alleged spread to the lymph nodes, for that period of time of the alleged diagnosis did not sensorily perceive discomfort or pain. And I'd like to go to the cases that some of them that they refer to, for instance, the New Jersey.
So if you, if the radiologist misses a tumor, and when it's finally discovered, it's the size of a basketball, if you didn't feel it, no harm, no foul in terms of compensation.
No, not at all. It is our position for the period of time of the alleged diagnosis, if they did not sensorily perceive it, for that period of time, no recovery. However, in the underlying medical malpractice case, if they can prove that that alleged diagnosis led to different treatment, for instance, there's an issue here whether or not she needed the lymph node dissection, whether or not there was different care and treatment, chemotherapy, radiation, there can be allegations or proof of emotional distress to what they claim was different because of the alleged delay in diagnosis. It's our position that for that period of time where she did not sensorily perceive it. For instance, the case of Evers versus Dollinger that they referred to from New Jersey, which is clearly in support of our position, that was analyzed, the emotional distress, in the context of a medical malpractice case and not negligent infliction of emotional distress.
Would you include the amount of time that she actually discovered the lump until it was removed as a sensorily perceived amount of time? An occasion?
And I think that's the case we're talking about here, is that for that period of time when something became sensorially perceived, and then if they put on evidence down below that it changed the treatment, for instance, let's say she did not need that lymph node dissection because of the alleged delay in diagnosis. Well, she can allege that, well, I had to undergo the lymph node dissection, and as a result, I suffered physical pain, discomfort, emotional distress. That's part of the underlying medical malpractice case. That's the one they found the genuine issue of material fact.
But the actual time between her discovery and the confirmation and the surgery, she was able to perceive that she had a lump in her breast. And that, I believe, is part of the argument of why she was the victim of severe emotional distress.
Right, and once again, it's our position that that's part and parcel of the underlying medical negligence case, and that they can go back and try to prove that, okay?
So but, what you're saying is that she has to be in physical pain as a result of the growth of the tumor, and then there's a separate consideration?
I think the emotional distress has to be connect it to some kind of perception and not necessarily going back and saying for that period of time what the Ninth District found is that the growth of the tumor itself was enough to establish the negligent or the emotional distress.
Mr. Leake, aren't you saying that the distress itself is part of the damages that we're talking about here?
Exactly, and that's
and rather than the independent tort that we are talking about, which is separate and apart, but the idea of emotional distress certainly is part of the case if the medical malpractice case is being put before the jury. Her distress can be included.
That's exactly our position in medical malpractice cases in general, is that it's...
Counsel, your red light is on.
Okay. Thank you. And we ask that you reverse the judgment of the Ninth District. Thank you.
Mr. Scanlon.
Thank you, Madam Chief Justice. Good morning. I'm Larry Scanlon, speaking on behalf of Lana Loudon. If you would be so kind as to allow me to read, I think, an important decision of this court and its reasoning behind its finding is as follows. A patient who seeks medical assistance from a professional caregiver has the right to expect proper care and should be compensated for any injury caused by the caregiver's negligence.
Would you pull the microphone a little closer? We're having difficulty hearing you.
I've had that told to me before. Over the years, medical technology has improved and advances have been made in the treatment of many areas of medicine, including cancer. However, these medical strides are meaningless unless early detection is practiced diligently by those in the healthcare field. That's the Roberts decision that this court entered in 1996, and the defendant in this case recognizes that early detection is key to successful treatment of breast cancer. Lana Loudon had been a patient of radiology imaging since 1999. She went for annual mammograms in part because of her husband's death due to cancer, which she felt was as a result of delay, though there was never any malpractice case. So in keeping with what she had been advised by all of her healthcare professionals, she was engaged in annual mammograms and was only alerted that there had been a mistaken diagnosis or failure to diagnose when she found a lump on her own annual breast exam or monthly breast exam in 2004. She went to her caregiver. The caregiver refers her. She goes back to radiology imaging, and they do what's called a diagnostic study. Of course, at this point, they had a lump. So they knew what they were looking for, and sure enough, Dr. Sklobar, who read that mammogram, said, this is clearly malignant. He didn't need much, any further testing. And so she was referred, and her first round of therapy was surgery. It was determined that she had a grade one cancer. She had a lumpectomy. Bad news to get cancer, good result to catch it early. Within 6 weeks, she was told that's not correct. She's got a 2A, it's in her nodes. She needed wider surgery, and the bottom of her world fell out. It was the worst possible outcome. It is exactly what she was trying to avoid for years. And we developed and filed a medical malpractice case. As I've gone through the courts of appeal argument and here today, I think there's some confusion as to what was pled, what was proved, and what we intend to prevail on in front of a jury, and that is a traditional medical malpractice case where we have met what we believe is a traditional causation claim.
Do you agree with the counsel that this decision sets up a separate and independent negligent infliction that is subject to a 2-year statute of limitations?
I don't believe so, and I'll work backwards. I don't believe anywhere in that decision they said, and therefore we are creating judicially a separate tort subject to a different standard, not only of evidence but of statute of limitations. It's actually addressing the defendant's arguments that were down below and then in the Court of Appeals that we had somehow pled and argued a claim for negligent infliction of emotional distress. And as I said, it was like I was reading a different case. That is not what we pled. It is not what I think we proved. Well,
do you think that since this case has been reversed, are you in agreement that you have to prove an underlying negligent malpractice case, and that in that case you can recover all these damages for the delay and the emotional distress and the other aspects that you've mentioned?
I do, Your Honor. I believe that is what we have to prove. And the damage case for Lana is an enhancement of her risk.
And what do you
still living with?
What do you read the decision as saying about negligent infliction of emotional distress? Is it a separate tort? Is it a part of the underlying? What does the Court of Appeals, in your opinion, say about that?
Well, I believe, Justice, that the argument was essentially what we heard from Mr. Leek here at the end, that there was no real injury here, that this there was no contemporaneous physical injury, that had to be an external force, which really Heiner doesn't say, Justice, and McGarry cites that, and that's what the Court of Appeals said. That is that in this case, there was a 13-month delay. It allowed this condition to double in size and to change its situs to get into the lymph nodes. That's the heart of the deviation from the standard of care case and the medical malpractice causation case. It leads to an enhanced risk, enhanced damages for her fear of recurrence.
And that's all recoverable within a standard negligence malpractice case?
I believe it is. And I believe that's what the court held. And I think they were addressing the contemporaneous physical injury. And I would say that, and I
Counsel,
could be-
Counsel, the trial court didn't approach it that way, did they? There was a two-step process.
They did.
Am I correct?
It did. You're exactly right, Chief Justice. And I was confused when I read the decision. I looked back at our complaint and I thought, have I pled a separate tort? I certainly never intended to. I complied with Rule 10. I had an expert who testified by videotape. We had a causation expert. This is really about the fact that at the time of the misdiagnosis, she had an 80% probability of no nodal involvement, that a year later was a 0%. That's really the change in
which
diagnosis.
Which are all enhanced features of your case of medical malpractice.
That's correct, Chief Justice.
So you are not here today asking this court to create a separate tort of negligent infliction of emotional distress under these circumstances?
Under these circumstances, no.
Okay, one of my opening questions with Mr. Leeks was whether he's really concerned about the statute of limitations issue, and if a Med-Mal case is missed on the statute for 1 year, can a patient then, plaintiff, bring an action under the 2-year statute of limitations for negligent infliction of emotional distress and then prove a case within a case, which is the medical mal, in order to bootstrap that to a negligent infliction of emotional distress? That's what he's concerned with, and I want to know if that's what you envision as a possibility if we uphold the Ninth District.
I didn't understand that, Chief Justice, when you asked Mr. Leek. I do now. I think the answer is no. I think it is still a medical malpractice case. It still has to be brought within a year. I think the central issue down below was whether or not Ohio would be among the, what I believe is the leaning forward states that decide that unchecked growth of cancer is a compensable injury. I mean, I think, and then
but
the
you
issue
want to
is,
be able to present that evidence in the trial court about what is in essence the enhanced, I don't want to use the word loss of chance or anything akin to that, but the additional injury of this emotional trauma, not based on the fact, oh my God, I have cancer and I have to go through this, you know, this series of treatment, and you want to bring in the fact that she is now plagued with the thought that her likelihood of a reoccurrence is enhanced.
That's exactly right. The in every disease process, the healthcare provider is generally not the cause. They are hopefully there to prevent further spread, further progression, whether that's cardiovascular disease or whether that's cancer. And in this case, obviously, Mrs. Loudon, like any other patient, was going to have a reaction to the diagnosis. But that's not why the case was brought. The case was brought because there was a breach of trust, a loss of faith.
Mr. Scanlon, the issue before us concerns the negligent infliction of emotional distress and apparently some misperception as to what the Ninth District actually did. On the underlying case, though, about the unchecked growth of a tumorous cancer, what did the Ninth District say in connection with what the trial court ruled in summary judgment on that issue?
They said that this, it said page 20 and it was in paragraph 39. Unlike the false positive testing in Heiner and the mishandling of the tissue sample in Dober, neither of which subjected anyone to any real threat of physical harm. In this case, Mrs. Loudon presented evidence that Dr. Patterson alleged negligence subjected her to a 13-month delay in treating her breast cancer. According to her expert oncologist, during the delay, the cancer doubled in size and metastasized her lymph nodes, exposing her to an increased risk of recurrence and death. Mrs. Loudon presented evidence that the increased risk of recurrence caused her to suffer serious emotional distress distinct from what she felt at her initial diagnosis of cancer. And I don't know if I answered that question or not.
Counsel.
Well, what I was trying to get at, I think, is the relationship between the negligent infliction of emotional distress and the growth of the tumor. And hadn't the trial court ruled on that issue adversely to your client? And is the appellate court's determination substituting its judgment for that of the fact finder in light of the experts who testified
on
behalf of both?
Justice, the trial court determined as a matter of law that the growth and metastasis of cancer is not a compensable injury in Ohio.
And the appellate court didn't really address that issue. They only addressed it from the standpoint of a negligent infliction of emotional distress, if I understand it correctly. And I wonder if you agree.
I don't agree, Justice. I do believe that they said they were not prepared to say that. That they, if I may. They thought that reasonable minds could conclude that had the cancer been diagnosed a year earlier, it would not have doubled in size, and metastasized to the lymph nodes and increased to a stage 2A. That growth and metastasis of cancer constitute physical harm that is a compensable physical injury if it is causally related to a breach of duty, and that reasonable minds could conclude that the 13-month delay caused by Dr. Patterson's deviation from standard care was the proximate cause of the growth and metastasis of the breast cancer.
So what you're telling us is the real issue here is whether or not the growth of a cancer in a period of delay before it's discovered, as in this case 13 months, I think you said, is a compensable injury in Ohio, the trial court having ruled it's not, and the appellate court having reversed that. But that issue wasn't really briefed for us on this appeal, was it?
I thought we briefed it. Must not have done it very well.
Counsel, let me approach it a different way. It appears to me that your argument is, and that's why I ask opposing counsel to point to me exactly where he said the Court of Appeals went off the tracks, and he gave me a global answer to that. It appears to me that your view is you properly pled a medical negligence case, that part of what we're talking about here today, or what opposing counsel is talking about, is a part of the damages that you hope to prove if you get this case to a
to a jury, that the trial court went off the tracks in response to the defendant's arguments before the trial court, and the Court of Appeals simply put this thing back on the tracks where it was to begin with.
That's my read.
So what's the purpose of us even writing in this case? Is there anything for us to explain about where the Court of Appeals went wrong?
I don't believe so. I believe this court should sustain or decline to rule and let that Ninth District opinion stand.
It occurs to me that the only issue that got briefed here was whether the court impermissibly created a new infliction of emotional distress cause of action.
I don't believe that the court did that. I read the decision a couple times yesterday and last night trying to see.
You commented during your presentation that other states, sort of the new edge, have allowed claims for this growth of cancer. Well, what states were you referring to?
Colorado, New Jersey, Indiana, Virginia.
So there is a new wave of cases. And
some of these are 10 or 15 years old. I don't want to give
Ohio
the impression
not,
that
Ohio has not gone there.
In my opinion, there's been no expression on that single issue until Loudon.
In the trial court?
Court of Appeals, the Ninth District decision.
Okay.
On the growth of cancer. As
this court has never presented that.
I don't believe so.
And that specific issue hasn't been briefed.
Again, I thought we did, but.
Mr. Scanlon, if I could ask, paragraph 51 of the Court of Appeals decision, the conclusion, they're talking about remanding for both the negligent infliction of emotional distress claim and the claim for medical malpractice. Did you have two counts? Did you have one count for negligent infliction and one count for med mal?
I don't believe I did. I believe that what we did was made sure in our amended pleading that we were talking about the increased or enhanced fear of recurrence of cancer. I mean, that is at the heart of her claim. But I don't believe I pled a negligent infliction. I always plead emotional distress as an element of medical malpractice.
So I guess the question is, could this be a confusing case if someone were to read that conclusion and then say, well, we're talking about two separate claims here?
That's a good point, Justice. Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Scanlon. Mr. Leake, you've used your time, but I'll give you 45 seconds.
That is exactly our position here. When they amended their complaint, they did file a medical malpractice case. They amended it. We opposed it and challenged it because it appeared that they were now pursuing a negligent infliction of emotional distress when we believed their other case was failing. And the trial court recognized that there was a negligent infliction of emotional distress claim there, and we moved
for
that.
Counsel, the case is sent back. I can't tell whether you started setting up a straw man to knock down all the way along here or whether there's a legitimate dispute of some kind. It doesn't appear there's any dispute. You and Mr. Scanlon agree that this case that goes back should be a medical malpractice case, period.
Exactly.
And
that's our point.
And you will argue to a jury about the damages.
That is exactly our point. But the problem with the Ninth District decision is that they separately address the underlying medical malpractice case and found a genuine issue of material fact and remanded for that, and then separately addressed it in a reasoned decision, legal analysis of a separate cause of action for negligent infliction of emotional distress. And so what we are left with now in the Ninth District is a negligent infliction of emotional distress cause of action in the context of a medical negligence case. They have remanded this case for two claims. We believe there's only one claim that can go back, and that's medical negligence, and that Ohio does not represent a negligent infliction of emotional distress in the context of a medical negligence case.
Thank you.